You're up. We're going, huh? All right. What we live in is a unity. And if it wasn't a unity, we couldn't even know something, because we wouldn't be connected by the same unity of reality. It has to be all one thing. When we are awake, we know that we're awake and that we have consciousness. And we know that waking up to greater consciousness is part of that unity. And that waking up comes about when we experience things that we didn't know before, but now we know. So each of us has had that experience, which is the experience of learning. In the experience of learning, things pass from the unknown to the known in our consciousness. Now, if we take note of things that we've learned, they're the same things that they were before we learned them. They may have been changed by our becoming conscious of them, but basically they are what they were before. The unity in which us and the things that we learn share in common is still the same unity. What has changed is our consciousness. We have a different grade of consciousness about things that we didn't know were even there or had meaning before. And from this we can see that the act of learning has changed the subject. It's changed the subject where the object may not have been changed or may not have been significantly changed. And when we're changed forever, especially if what we have learned is something beautiful. Suppose we had never heard music before, and then we learn that there is such a thing as music, we're never the same person after that again. Life is so much better. So from this we can say that knowledge is a matter of greater waking consciousness. We're awake to a greater part of reality. And we can say that that new consciousness is a consequence. That's our word. We're looking for cause and consequence of the act of learning, which could be called the cause of learning. Now, this is a very simple experiential example of the way cause and consequence relates to unity. The cause or act of bringing ourselves to learn something exists within a unity which contains the same thing, which is the same unity that contains what we have learned. This is actually an example that, though experiential and something that we can relate to, is really not so simple. It's quite difficult because there are many, many factors in the act of learning, so that if we try to study what happens when we learn, it becomes very complex very quickly. Because there is that intuitive moment when we know the truth of something, in the process of learning, it seems like it's simple, but it's pretty complicated, especially if you've tried to bring people to understand and learn something, if you try to teach something. Now, we're not going to go into all of those many factors, because that would be outside of what we're trying to do. We're trying to do something much more simple-minded than that, and there's no reason why you can't look into that yourself and observe what has happened in yourself when you do learn something and what was conducive to that. The point that we're trying to get to and repeat many times over is that there is a unity. And that unity is maintained even though there are changes in either the subject or in the object. Because we have learned things and the things are still themselves. They are what they were before we learned the facts about them. We have changed in our consciousness. What has happened is we have become aware of those facts. We have learned what is going on, what's there. Our self-consciousness is enhanced in this process because we can't learn about something without learning about ourselves at the same time. You can't have an intuition about the nature of something without waking up to the fact that it is you that experiences the intuition that you know that something is true. The intuition is obviously a being in touch with the unity that connects subject and object between yourself and what you're learning. This is why the intuitive act of knowing the truth of something is so very important. We can know, for example, that what we have learned is true because we can creatively set up circumstances from our intuitive knowledge that we can test and that we can produce new conditions, and in those new conditions we know what is what. This is a sort of a scientific way of what the Bible calls trying the spirits, because in it we can interact with reality in a separative way. Now, the change of consciousness has been brought about by action. All changes of consciousness are basically brought about by action. If you go into a woods, you might not see all the birds and animals, especially the animals. They know that, or the group spirits guiding the animals know that if they sit still, you will not be conscious of them. But the moment they move, you see a change. And with that change, or with that action, you become conscious that something is there. And that is the way consciousness is brought about by action. We're trying to understand in this talk action. The principle of cause and consequence has sometimes been called the law of action. So we're talking about action in relation to selfhood. We're talking about how we see ourselves as a consequence of having intuitively learned something. We're talking about ourselves being aware of ourselves in being able to deliberately set new causes into being so that we can know ourselves through our action and so that we can know the reality through our action. So this is one of the oldest names for the principle of cause and consequence. It goes back thousands of years into India, where it is called the principle of action. Now, in this talk, we're going to look at action by looking at astrology. We're going to explore action somewhat in concrete and not so much in abstract as we've been talking about it for the last few minutes. But it will not be specific action only. Specific action is ruled by Mars, and we're going to talk about much more than Mars. We'll be talking about the attitude of activity and the attitude of action and about the fields of attitude of action. Remember from the introduction yesterday, we're talking about the 3 degrees or the 3 attitudes of destiny. Pay as you go destiny, vicarious destiny, and fixed destiny. And today we're looking at the pay as you go. Now when we talk about attitude and fields of attitude, automatically what comes to mind are the signs of the zodiac. Because the signs of the zodiac are a whole field, each of them is a field of attitude of a specific type. That's a good definition of a sign, is a field of attitude. It isn't a focus of attitude. A focus of attitude would be what a planet is. The planet is what carries things out, but the planet carries out what is in that field of attitude. This is an example of the principle that everything is in everything. Astrology is a symbolic, abstract roadmap of spiritual reality. And everything in the spirit is in everything else in the spirit. And so that if we look anywhere in the cosmos at any particular thing, we should be able to understand the entire cosmos or any other part of the cosmos relative to that one thing. So in astrology, if we know something about the signs, we automatically know something about the planets and about the houses. Or if we know about the houses, we know something about the aspects and about the planets. So astrology is just like the spiritual reality that it represents. Every part of it is very closely related to every other part of it, whether we're looking at mundane expression or whether we're looking at far-fetched spiritual ideas. Everything is in everything. It's one universal spirit in which we find everything, and it is one universal spirit that is within everything. Who's talking to me? I get jealous. I got the floor I want to myself. A hog. When we're talking about the universal and its objectification in the universe is associated with the number 3, and it is associated with the triangle. If you take any number of dimensions from 1 to infinity, the least number of straight lines, which represent directions of consciousness that produce an object, is 3. When 3 lines intersect each other, you have an object. And that object has an inside or an outside. It is like a triangle in that regard. You might say that there are curved lines. And the epitome of curved lines is the circle. And if you look at a circle, it also takes into account the part of 3. There is the center, there is the moving circumference point, and there is a point from above that is like if you have a compass and you're drawing that circle, that's the compass point. So even circular objectivity that produces an object that has an inside and outside is completely dependent on a 3-point or 3-line kind of system. Now, in the abstract universal 3 or trinity or triad, the 3 points stand for will, love, wisdom, and activity. And each of these principles of trinity is associated with one of the symmetric quadruplicities of the zodiac. For example, the will principle He is associated with Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. They represent the fixed assertion of will, that eternal association with of will. In reflection, the fixed signs represent the perverse stubbornness of manifest objects. The love-wisdom principle, the median or the middle person that is between the first and the third attributes, the first being unchangeable and the third being actively changeable, is the middle sign. The love-wisdom signs are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. They are called common signs or mutable signs. They're called common signs because they have characteristics between the season before them and the season that follows them. For example, Pisces has some of the characteristics of late winter and some of the characteristics of summer that is coming. When we're talking about the activity principle, we're talking about the cardinal signs: Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. So that's what we're going to be speaking about today. The third attribute of manifest spirit is the focus of self, the spiritual ego, the human spirit. And that self is the doer. That self is what is capable of acting. If everything is in a unity, there's a kind of a homeostasis. Even if it's alive with vitality, it's only when things become separated and the balance of homeostasis is broken that things become accomplished. And what the thing that does the accomplishing is all of the individual selves that are in the cosmos. So we're talking about the self, we're talking about the thinker with a capital T, we're talking about a doer with a capital D. Now yesterday we noted that the standard destiny has to do with action. And the standard destiny has to do with the cardinal signs, which are active signs. And so the standard destiny is pay as you go. The example that is always given is you step on the head of the hoe or on the head of the rake, and the handle comes and bops you in the head immediately. It isn't something that you have to wait for a future life. It's pay as you go. Now this is shown in several ways in the cardinal signs. And in this talk, we're going to talk about cardinal sign character and destiny by looking at people in action. Now, just a few minutes ago, we said that specific energy was represented by Mars. Mars rules Aries, which is the first of the cardinal signs, meaning to say that action is kicked off by doing something specific, anything specific if it's Aries. Mars is exalted in Capricorn, and that is very directed or object-oriented activity, goal-oriented activity. Saturn rules Capricorn, but it also is exalted in Libra, which is another of the cardinal signs. And so we can see that between Saturn and Mars, they have a lot to do with cardinal sign activity and with changes. Saturn has always been the arbiter of the law. It does everything down to the last jot and tittle. The mills of God grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly fine. And that's a good example of the way Saturn works. The law itself, the reaction or the compensation for the breaking of homeostasis, comes from Libra. So that is a reactive kind of quality. So we see then that the basic ideas of law and destiny are found between Saturn and Libra, with the action that is behind it being associated with Mars and Aries and Capricorn. Now, these are a few of the things that we can see in association with the cardinal signs. We're looking now, we're going to start looking at a lot of horoscopes, at a simple pay-as-you-go kind of destiny. When you're thinking about doing something, or when you're doing something, your attention is on the doing. And there's something very present about it. And that's what cardinal sign consciousness is like. It's not so concerned about past lives or about future lives. It's focused on doing the task right now. Mars only cares about action. And when it's in the action, it is itself, and it revels in that kind of action. So the action is present and immediate. And even the kinetic sense of appreciation of the action is in the moment. Now we're going to look at horoscopes that are predominantly cardinal sign horoscopes. And we're not going to do any deep or comprehensive analysis. It's very lightweight astrology, and basically what we're trying to do in this, because we have only 1 hour for each day, and that's hardly time to understand something comprehensively or to understand something in depth or in detail. So what we're just going to do is look at a few little things that are familiarizing us with what we're trying to get in touch with. Familiarity is what we're trying to get at. We're trying to get the flavor today of cardinal signs and activity and cardinal participation in destiny. Of course, we're trying to appreciate human character. We're trying to love people. And so we'll look at a few sidelong things along the way, depending on whatever interests us in the moment. Now, since some of the people that we're going to talk about are still living in the flesh, we have to be a little bit respectful of them, and we have to be merciful of them. We have to appreciate. it's not a very nice thing to take astrological cheap shots. You can get away with it, you can do all kinds of clever things like that, but basically it's not nice. In most cases, we have well-known people, so that you can see how these things worked in the people's lives. If we don't have that, we'd have obvious examples from reports of their life. And the horoscopes were chosen not only because they're cardinal sign examples, but because they're interesting. Now, the criterion that I used for selecting these horoscopes is that at least half of the planets had to be in cardinal signs, which means that we really got a good for cardinal sign focus. So, see, the cardinal sign reaches right away. she's another Aries. You guys could get into an assertathon. First horoscope we're going to look at is at the horoscope of Barbara Cartland. Do we have enough horoscopes to go around for everybody? Okay. I think everybody's got one, though. All right. I could go to a class that you were in just to hear you laugh and your recognition of things. Oh, please don't. Be yourself. We don't want... We don't want the muted version of you. We want it full out. It's a cardinal sign day to day. You can go full bore. All right, Barbara Cartland. We're trying to talk about the principle of action and get a feel for action. Normally, we act to get things done and to reach goals. Goals and the opportunities to attain goals are indicated by the 10th house. And with Saturn in the 10th house in Capricorn, this is somebody that has very definite, very specific goals. In order to reach a goal, you have to be specific. If you try to have a general goal, you know, the general things go on and on and on. So if you have one particular thing you're trying to do, you can accomplish it. That doesn't mean that you can only accomplish that one thing. You can accomplish many as long as you stay pointed. Saturn in this horoscope is trine to Pluto. So she sets goals and she holds to them. Those are two very firm planets. And she sets goals to be productive. That's the relationship tenth house and the second house. Probably there's also a goal to be wealthy because Pluto does things in a mega style, and it would be mega wealth when it is in the second house. Now this horoscope has five planets and the angles in cardinal signs. So she's very, very active. The moon is in Aries and it conjoins the ascendant. And it forms a very strong sextile with Neptune. So she is sensitive and fluent and communicative. Third house is the house of communications. And so she can just flow very, very rapidly. This is, Barbara Cartland is a British author. I'm sure you've heard of her romance novels and things like that. The Guinness Book of Records has Barbara Cartland as the most prolific of all writers. She has written and published 723 books. And the total puts you to shame, doesn't it, Lulu? And the total sales of her books are over a billion. She has sold over a billion books. It's hard to even conceive that number. When she was writing romance novels, she could write a romance novel in 1 week's time. But she didn't only write on them. She wrote on philosophy. She wrote on history. She wrote on sociology. She wrote on cooking. She wrote poetry. And she wrote an autobiography. Now, she's active, but there's also repose. She has the sun in Cancer, which is a sign that very much appreciates comfort and repose for anyone. This is how she would write her novels in the latter part of her life, or second half of her life. She would sit in a chaise lounge, and she had secretaries, and she'd just dictate. And she would write a novel, and she'd bat it out in a week, and then she'd start another one. It's really quite something. But she worked serially. She didn't work a little bit on this, and then a little bit on that, a little bit on this. This is a serial consciousness. This is, you want to be singular. You want to be one-pointed if you want to accomplish a lot of things. She is, with the Aries rising, she was very Aries rising. She always wore pink, and she had big hair, and she always wore her hair in a big, she was bold, and she stood out there for everybody to see. She was a homebody. She didn't go too much out into society, which is exactly what we'd expect. She liked the activity in the home, but that was also important in another way. The sun in this horoscope and Mercury sextile Mars in the sixth house. Now the fourth house is the latter part of life. And she became very active in the latter part of her life. She realized the fact is that the exercise that you do after age 50 is more important than the exercise that you do before age 50. So she became an activist for geriatric exercise and activity. And she herself lived to be 98 years old, and she attributed her old age to making sure that she was physically active when she got older, and she continued it as long as she could. All right, let's look at the next horoscope. See, when you do a talk like this, you don't have to say any deep things, but the people are so engaging that just for the love of people, it's easy to give a talk like this. Next horoscope is one of my very favorite people. It's Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory was not only active, he was an activist, and is an activist. He's an activist in politics, especially in racial affairs, and anti-war and pacifistic things, and he is a health food activist. In fact, he's had several times in his life, he has had lines of health food products. Aries is rising again, and he was an athlete. He had that trim, tapered body that you find for athletics, and at one time he was a record holder in both the half mile and the mile. He had before he was inducted into the Army, he had a scholarship to run track. And when he got out of the Army, he went back to college, but he never finished because he was not well received. And his statement about it was, they wanted me to run. They didn't want me to learn. Now, this is a very witty man. If you want to hear wit, he was once in the South, and he practiced his activism by going into this restaurant, and the waitress comes up to him and says, "We don't serve black people, or we don't serve colored people," those are words. And he said, "Fine, I don't eat them anyway. Please give me a whole fried chicken." They brought out the whole fried chicken, and three white toughs come walking up to him and say, "We're going to do to you what you do to that chicken." So he bends over and kisses it. He's really clever. He was great friends with Bill Clinton. He was Bill Clinton's favorite comedian. And one time on Air Force One, he and a bunch of dignitaries were on Air Force One, and he made Newt Gingrich go sit in the back of the plane. Let him see what it's like. That's tit for tat, Libra kind of consciousness. Again, we have this time more than half of the planets. We have six planets, and the primary angles are in cardinal signs. Now, when we use technique to study attitudes, we're asking for trouble. When we're looking only at cardinal signs, because all of the cardinal signs are square to each other, so we expect to see a lot of squares and oppositions, and that's what we find in this horoscope. We're not disappointed by that at all. The sun is in Aries and its opposite Uranus, which means he's a contrarian. He's an anti. He's antagonistic to many things, but he's active about it. He isn't just a quiet contrarian that sits in the corner and grumbles about how bad things are and how he's a counterforce in society, he's sort of a society alter ego with the sun being in Libra. Being the contrary to so many things, he isn't always popular because negative people have a hard time being popular, especially if they speak up. When they have that kind of wit, he has that. He was a stand-up comedian, was his primary profession. He has Saturn square Mercury, and he has a mind that can see injustice, and it's very pointed. And when you have those very pointed barbs, that's what Saturn-Mercury afflictions are like. Mercury is also squared Pluto. And so there's a very deep, cold, hard, sardonic quality to a lot of his humor. So we can see that he's got a lot of grating qualities, a lot of combative qualities, but he's not completely negative. But most of the positive things in his life do not receive publicity. For example, he is a father to 10 children. And he is an excellent family man. If we look at this horoscope, Venus and Neptune are conjoined in the fifth house. And at least half of his children demonstrate qualities of genius. So we can see that was able to bring that out, or they were attracted to him for that reason. And he taught them to deport themselves with dignity. And that is the relationship of Mars and Leo, is you respect me. I have this kind of regal kind of dignity. Now, even though the sun is in Libra and the sixth house, we expect a certain kind of action. That's his activism in health matters. He's famous for fasting. He does protest fasts. Whenever there's injustice, he fasts himself very close to death. In 1999, he came down with lymphatic cancer. I hope not from eating too much fried chicken. But he came down with cancer. And 10 years later, he's still around perking away, and he's doing it all by keeping it in what he calls perpetual remission by the use of herbs and natural foods. All right, let's look at the next one, which is Yvonne Burke. Probably nobody here knows who Yvonne Burke is. You have to be from the West Coast. Action for the sake of action alone gets tiring. But people who participate in action often become famous. Raw action is what we get when we have Aries alone. Capricorn is distinguishing action. Aries likes competition. It likes winning and it likes defeating. Capricorn likes precedent action. It likes position. It likes seniority. Cancer likes protective action. Libra likes defensive action, compensatory action. In this horoscope, Uranus is in Aries, and so the life is loaded with firsts. She is a true pioneer. She set all kinds of precedents. She's the first African-American to be in the California State Assembly. She is the first congresswoman west of the Mississippi that was an African-American woman. She's the first woman in Congress of all women to give birth to a child while in office. She is the first African-American woman to hold the vice chair of the Democratic National Party. And she's the first woman to chair the Congressional Black Caucus. Well, this is somebody that is the first. Like, if you get off early and if you energetic, and if you're fast, you move to the front. And that's what the principle is here. Her activity, she is primarily a political activist. She is a shaker and a mover. And even though she's the first in a lot of these things, she'd be famous for being the first in these things because of Uranus and Aries in the 10th house. She prefers to be a behind-the-scenes person, just as you'd expect with the Sun in the 4th house. She is a defender of rights, and she does that from behind the scenes. Pluto is in the 1st house, so she is always in the proximity of power. It's nearby. Neptune conjoins Jupiter in the 3rd house, and so she's an inspired orator. She's a very sensitive communicator. These are things that distinguish her. The trines to the Moon in Capricorn in the 6th indicate the efficiency that she was known for being able to deport herself with great efficiency in the work that she did. All right, let's move on to the next horoscope. I guess I must be dating myself because I, not that way. because I choose people that are of an era that most people these days are not familiar with. Everybody know who Jack Anderson is? Or was, yeah. All right, this is Jack Anderson. Now, one of the things that the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches is that one of the consequences of action or a life of actions is conscience. When a person initiates and participates in many causes, especially if the causes have consequences sooner than later, the effect is that person has a change of consciousness and has a historical sense of things which results as conscience. If a person is changed forever and changed forever so that the new consciousness extends into the future, that's a pretty good definition of conscience. Two planets that are most associated with conscience are the Sun and Saturn. And the Sun indicates the element of self-responsibility, the self-consciousness. The factual element, the historical element, the thing that grinds things in very deeply is the Saturnine element. So where you find a strong Saturn and a strong Sun, especially if they are an aspect, find a person with great conscience. In this case, both Saturn and the Sun are very strong. They have a lot of aspects. They are not in aspect with each other. So this is a person that has a conscious conscience, but it isn't a specific conscience focused on only one thing. It's more broad to the character. Now, any time that anyone is strongly self-conscious, they're likely to be conscientious. So that's what we find in this horoscope. Now, some professions or some callings in life demand a strong conscience, because if you don't have it, you won't survive. Now, this man is what they now call an investigative journalist. The old term for it is that he was a muckraker. And the way this is shown in his life and the way it works out in his horoscope is really quite delightful. It's a good broad example. He was a straight-shooting Mormon. Air signs like things clear and fresh and open. He has 5 planets in air and 2 in water. So that's what we expect. We expect somebody fresh and clear and open. Cancer, which likes the home, is on the ascendant, and the Sun and four other planets are in the fourth house. So we have here someone who is a great home person, like Dick Gregory was. Jack Anderson had 8 children, and he had a very strong family life. He was not superstitious in a religious way about family values. It was him, and it was his with integrity. And even though he was a Mormon, the first investigative thing he did as a Mormon was to investigate polygamy in his own religion. And he exposed it, and he exposed it for the wrong things that come out of it. So when you take on your own religion and you're loved and respected in your own religion, even though you clean it up, this is quite an individual. Now, the Libra likes to have partnership. Was with Drew Pearson, who was another muckraker who ran what was called the Washington Merry-Go-Round. And Drew Pearson is symbolized in this horoscope by Mars in Capricorn in the fourth house, a partner that is strong and vigorous, but at the same time dignified. Yeah, partnership. Now, few people ever dared to challenge Drew Pearson, because he would counterattack anybody who challenged him, and he had the dirt on absolutely everyone. And the way that Jack Anderson worked was a little bit different. He tried to be fair to everyone, and if people were hypocritical, he didn't try necessarily to bring them down. But he exposed things just in the sense of fairness. And in the time of the Nixon administration, he was exposing people, and this got the dander up of that administration. And they sent the person who was considered almost a god by society, they sent J. Edgar Hoover after him. And he put all kinds of pressure on Jack Anderson, and Jack Anderson finally responded with a counteraction. He said, well, let's give him a taste of his own medicine. So we had that tit for a tat kind of activity, and so he exposed all kinds of things about J. Edgar Hoover, including J. Edgar Hoover's ties to the mafia, his ties to Cuban assassination plots, and he completely degraded and broke down J. Edgar Hoover, who sort of went into the dither for the rest of his life. That wasn't his intent, but he thought fair play is fair play. These are just a few examples, and we're just about out of time, so we'll move on very quickly to the... We'll move on to the next horoscope, which is a rather trivial horoscope. I don't expect anybody to know this person. This is the horoscope of Anita McEwen. Now, actions have consequences, and sometimes people just act for the sake of acting. They're impulsive. They get desire impulses. And when you do something without thought, without deliberation, and without a cause, what happens is the reaction to that, or the consequence of that, is an accident. And this is a person who has a lot of accidents. For each of our lives, there is a thought, a very complex thought, that is our life and our body. It's called an archetype. Not in the Jungian sense of the word, but more like from Greek philosophy. An archetype is something from which things are built. It's a living model. And when a person has a lot of accidents in life, it's like an archetype that has a lot of gaps in it. And the gaps leave room for intuition, but they also leave room for accidents because you're not in control. Because if your thought is not with what you're doing, you're likely to have an accident. And so that describes this person quite well. The moon is in Aries in the first house, and it's square to the sun, and it can't make up its mind. There's all kinds of gaps in the consciousness. Now, this horoscope has the angles, but only four planets in cardinal signs. But I chose it anyway, even though half the planets aren't in cardinal signs, because this shows the consequences of cardinal sign life. She was Santa Monica police force. And she has been stabbed. She has been shot at. She has been hit by speeding cars, both as a pedestrian and while driving herself. She has slipped and fallen many times, and she's been bitten by a rattlesnake. All of this within the course of a 1 or 2 year period on the Santa Monica police force. They couldn't keep her because they felt, she was on her trial period, and they had so many problems with her and so many insurance claims and so many things that they couldn't keep her on. She's broken in that year or 2 years period. She broke an ankle, broke a finger, broke a sternum. She completely wrenched her back, and she had all kinds of wounds, including the snake bite. So if you're talking about somebody that acts, and even if she doesn't act, if you're just standing there on the sidewalk, people come up and hit her. This is the it's the consequence of a kind of action, a kind of active personality that doesn't even need to be not thinking. It just has to be present, and accidents happen. All right, let's look at the last horoscope. Yes. That's the main thing. That's the primary agency. Yes, Uranus is square to Venus, and Uranus rules accidents. Mars square Pluto would indicate things that are destined to occur, that it'd be very hard to get out of having them happen. All right, this is the horoscope of Donald Harvey. Does anybody know who Donald Harvey is? You don't know who Donald Harvey? Boy, that shows all kinds of people that nobody
Steve's
knows.
Brother?
Huh?
Steve's brother?
No. Max Heindel says of cardinal sign destiny that sometimes you do things that you can't have immediate retribution for, nor can you make it up to people that you have harmed. And that's why this horoscope was chosen, and why it was chosen at the last horoscope. This is somebody who saw himself and called himself the angel of death. He considered himself to be a mercy killer, and he mercifully killed people that he was angry with, too. In fact, that's how he got started. He's probably one of the worst serial killers in history. He claims by his own statement to have killed 87 people. And the law officials have verified between 36 and 57, depending on how firm or how squishy the evidence is. So it's possible that he's telling the truth. The first person he killed was when he was a nurse in a hospital. It was a mental hospital, but I'm not sure. But he was in a hospital, and the patient he was attending to, he was a nurse attendant, took fecal matter and rubbed it on his face. And he snapped right then and there, and he smothered the person to death. The Saturn conjoined Neptune is a smothering kind of aspect, especially in an Aries sign. And it would show mental health problems, somebody that goes crazy. Saturn is in a very strong square to Uranus, and this is somebody that just on a snap thing manifests hatred. When he was a young man, he hung around the hospital. All of those planets between the first and the 12th house, he was always charming around the hospital. And the nuns who ran the hospital, the charming ability to con other people, as indicated by Mars conjoined Venus, which can be very personable in its speech. And those planets are also square Uranus. And what happened is the nurses liked him so much that they took him on as an orderly. And that's when he was hired. But he killed many people that he thought were going to die anyway. And so he thought he was being an angel of mercy in being an angel of death. But he didn't limit it to that. He became very insecure about his lover. The Venus Mercury are opposite to Saturn and square to Uranus. The square to Uranus indicates a great romanticism, but the Saturn opposite Mercury and in Venus indicates an insecurity about love. And he thought his lover was going to be, he was a homosexual, and he thought his lover was going to be unfaithful to him, which means he probably had unfaithful thoughts himself. So he poisoned his lover to death. And then he had neighbors that made noise and said snide things to him, so he poisoned them to death, and that's when he got caught. Again, the Neptune-Saturn indicate the poisoning. Even the Mars in Scorpio indicates a poisoning kind of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So this is someone that... the Sun is opposite Neptune, and that clearly indicates delusion. Delusion about himself, delusion about his partners, and delusion about his patients. So this is somebody that, in a very cardinal sign way, put out more causes than he could feel the consequences of. And for that reason, he is the type of person that is going to have to make up a lot to people in the next life, and will have a lot of opportunities to do that. So what we'll do tomorrow is we will talk about vicarious destiny, which is common sign destiny, and we'll talk about people who have opportunities to make up something to the world by helping other people through service, and all of the alibis they make for not serving. The excuses, the common signs are the excuse mongers. I have a common sign rising, and I know that all too well. For now, let's close with the Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight. O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Now, if there are any questions?
Does the word vicarious?
Vicarious means through someone else. The most common use of the word that we run into in our lives is vicarious atonement, which is a religious term, which means that we are reunited with God through the act of Christ. And we are then vicarious in our relationship to God through the agency of another, in this case, Christ.
Okay, so through someone else.
Yes. Not directly. Yes.
Yes, question.
Yes.
Statement. You use the word consciousness and conscience.
Yes.
Conscience.
Conscience, yes.
Well, let me... They seem, as you were talking, I was getting confused. I'm saying, which word is he really using? And then as I was thinking about it, they're very similar, because yes, as you gain consciousness, you're going to have more of a conscience.
Yes. Conscience, S-C-I-E-N-C-E, is a special type of consciousness.
consciousness is first experienced through intuitive awakening. But intuitive awakening about personal responsibility and about deeds that you have brought into effect, that special kind of waking of consciousness intuitively that is associated with the history of past deeds is called conscience. It is a soul material that has not been developed by doing a lot of good deeds that you are aware of, but by having your bad deeds ground into you, and you have that historical remembrance, and you intuitively know that if you put your hand in the stove, you're going to burn it. And conscience is that special variety of consciousness.
So you sort of have to, you have to deviate from good deeds to have conscience to begin with, in some sense, or you wouldn't know what it
is. Correct. That's correct. There is another kind of soul material that you know that doing something good is going to make you feel good, but we don't usually call that conscience. We usually associate conscience with things that we have done negatively in the past.
What's the word for the other quality?
I don't know if there is a word for it.
Narcissism.
All right, that's about it.
The Sun opposition to Neptune is always delusional?
Usually, yes. It is someone who doesn't clearly see themselves. And it is someone that has an externalized experience of selfhood that is in conflict with the internal realization of self. Back in the 60s, I saw a lot of that from people who had the Sun opposite Neptune. And they could not differentiate their true being from knowing themselves from the drug experiences that they were having. And so they had a delusional view of themselves. They realized in the drug experience that there were wonderful things that could happen. But they didn't identify that clearly with their everyday being and with themselves as the director of it. And so there is a division between self-realization and between and some kind of psychic phenomenon. I can't say that it's, you know, the word delusional is an awfully strong word because it indicates something at the level of insanity, but something in that direction is what occurs. It's the differentiation between psychic or spiritual phenomena and basic selfhood and basic identity. It it's that kind of split in identity, and not necessarily schizophrenic, but a split in identity consciousness.
Split
in
identity consciousness.
Yes. So that the way you see yourself and the way you see others seeing you are two different things. And sometimes, depending on the strength of the planet, if you are strong into yourself, then you see yourself and you disregard what other people are reflecting back to you as illusion. If you see what other people are reflecting back to you, if Neptune is stronger, that becomes the reality, and then there is a sort of weakness in the sense of self. So the person is not real strong in themselves, and there's a trying to please the other in that. The relationship of self and other is basically the relationship of identity to the cosmos, and the cosmos being reflected in the other. And in that case, Neptune represents the other in a psychic or a spiritual kind of way.
Interesting. And is this something that it tends to be more activated by drugs or meditation?
Yeah, drugs is one of the things where there is an amplification of the psychic experience. And you might say of such people that they are being shocked out of the way that they have looked at themselves in the past by being pulled into something very different than what they were conceived of themselves to be. that's what happened with many of the hippies. When they started taking LSD and things like that, they realized that it was something very different than they ever thought they were. But what happened is they continued to go into the drug experience, and then they became alienated from themselves, and many of them had great psychological problems because they lost their sense of self. It would have been okay if they had that experience and that awakened them, and they had and brought them to work on themselves so they could make significant change, but it didn't work out that way. They became enamored of that experience, and you could see a progression of it in their consciousness. When they had their maiden or early drug experiences, they were just in awe of the experience. And all of, you know, one person once told me, I had never understood what water was until I was on a high and I had the sensation of water and what it was like, a bubble of water in my hand. And, you know, they would have those, they would come to what they thought were intuitive spiritual realizations. But the more they continued with the Neptune experience, the more it became that they were talking about their highs, and pretty soon they were just getting high and they weren't talking at all. And you could see a general degradation. It's the same thing happens with alcohol. You've seen that with people. It's,
so if drugs make things worse, it does something like meditation make things better?
Something in meditation. There you have both the spiritual phenomena and you have the self-initiation. That's a balance. Because meditation doesn't happen to you. Meditation doesn't take you to a place that you have to go whether you want to go there or not. Because if you're in meditation, you are voluntarily and willfully doing that, and that is an act of self, and that is not of being overwhelmed by a drug state or a psychic state.
This is real quick, but I'd like your comment on it. I did a lot of research on ayahuasca, which you know what ayahuasca is, the spirit of the vine. It's a hallucinogenic, and it's used in South America and different places.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the Church of Saint-Domingue and blah, blah, blah. And ayahuasca, there were some studies done that it was being used to treat drug addiction and alcoholism. I can understand it a little bit. But now as you're speaking, I'm going, is that just totally off base that they would be using a hallucinogenic to treat addictive disorders in people that want to be high? I just like, because I know a guy who's doing a lot of ayahuasca, years now, bringing the people down to Brazil because he can do the ayahuasca in Brazil and blah, blah, blah. And when I talk to him on the phone, everyone's in a blue moon, I hear this hollowness in him. Like he's not even a person anymore. I hear a hollow, empty person.
Yes. In the first place, you have to make a statement about the ancient Iranians. One man's Mede is another man's Persian. And what is good for some people is not good for other people. The reason that something like that is good is because some cultures have taken the use of herbs, which are different than in taking chemical LSD.
It's a real plant.
There is a hallucinogenic thing, but it is closer to nature, and they have made that part of their religious experience. And over many generations, they have built a ritual over that, and it is somewhere between being out of control and being in control of the whole thing and being brought to a state of consciousness through religious ritual. And if someone can be brought into that culture, they can then have the drug experience as something that leads them to something else, and that something else should eventually outgrow the drug experience. For many people, they do not outgrow the drug experience, and like there's a lot of that with peyote in Native American cultures. They never do outgrow it. But first, if someone does not take the whole culture and takes the whole experience of the ritual as just another kind of trip, it's a lot of piggybacking on the first one, then they're not likely to be affected in the same way, because it's not seriously their religion, and they're not following it as a progress to liberation. And it sounds like that's what's happened, is that this person has believed in something, but not so totally that he could give himself to it and be carried beyond it. And as a result, more and more soul material gets burnt up in psychic experiences, and pretty soon the person is left basically psychically hollow.
Yeah, because they're calling it heart initiation.
Yeah, for some people it is. You know, it's very hard to judge those things, and some people are benefited by it.
Yeah.
But in general, the principle is the principle of freedom. At any time that you have to rely on something outside of yourself to reach your spiritual state, you do not have freedom. Because the drug or the external agency takes you where it wants to take you. You're not free in taking it from your own self. It should almost, in a positive sense of pride, it should be that we do not want things that interfere with our consciousness, because that's what it becomes if something is trying to control you. It's an interference from your own controlled freedom. And, that's the standard. That's what we really want. And besides, but in looking at it in a lot of those things, spiritual experience is not looked at as second nature. It's looked at as a special occasion. And for many people, a special occasion that has a lot of entertainment to it. Hey, this is a great high I'm having, and I think I'm going to entertain myself. It's not really any different than the people who go out and guzzle a bunch of beer and laugh with their buddies and things like that. It may be a little bit more frenetic kind of entertainment, but it is still self-indulgence. It's the spiritual experience is part of your consciousness and part of the way that you participate in the universe and that you give your service and your being to the universe. That's what spiritual experience is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be something that is a special effect or something of that nature. It's time for a high-level conference. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.